Welcome to the Disruptive HR Podcast. If you want to do HR differently and are looking to improve your skills and influence, why not check out our website, disruptivehr.com. Hi, and welcome to another podcast from Disruptive HR, where we talk about disrupting the HR profession and changing outdated people practices for good. And typically when we do these podcasts, we look at a kind of core area of delivery, performance management, talent management, D&I. But today, Karen and I are going to be talking about how we deliver as an HR function. So not necessarily the what we deliver, but how we deliver. So I'm joined by Karen Moran, founder of Disruptive HR. Hello.
Hi.
So I'm going to kick off with a question for you, which is, what does the expression agile HR mean for you?
Oh, okay. So I think it's about, well, if you think about us as a function, guilty as charged, it can be a bit slow. Tend to take on a lot of projects. We can focus very much on kind of process. We can be very bureaucratic. You know, it's almost like we have to have, maybe because we're so worried about getting things wrong, we feel that we've got to be sort of overly prepared. So yeah, everything has to be perfect before we'll roll any new initiative out. You know, we tend to have those, the scripts for managers, the FAQs are already done and dusted. Yeah. We then sort of don't think about, you know, pilots. We go whole hog, you know, across the whole organization, and it can take a very long time. You know, that's the not agile, if you like.
Exactly. And yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I think that, you know, when I look back on my time as an HR director, I would do exactly as you described, and everything just took a long time, and it became all about getting the process right. And you kind of lost the human beings at that. I remember we were doing this massive pay and grading exercise at the BBC, and the intent was right. You know, we were trying to reduce the number of grades that we'd got. I think we'd got about like 19 grades, and then people would kind of add extras in, you know, like 5B and 5C and stuff. So we had all of these grades, and we also had tons of job titles. So we had 20,000 people worked on the staff at the BBC. We had more freelancers, but 20,000 staff. And we had 5,000 different job titles. So the intent was right, because it was a bit confusing. But we spent months working on this pay and grading structure. And by the time we'd done it, it was beautiful. You know, we had 6 grades. We'd got rid of loads of job titles. And we kind of re-emerged from our planning and our project management sessions. And everyone hated it, right? Yeah. So they absolutely hated it, because they liked the sense of progression. You know, they liked the fact
that quirky job titles.
They liked that because it was a way of showing that they were, progressing in the organization. It was about status. And I just wonder if we'd taken more of an agile approach to that, whether we would have made the same mistake. So if that's what agile isn't in HR, what is agile for you?
So I think we've just got to speed up, haven't we, really? We've got to keep at pace with the business, and we have to, back to your point about why are we doing it? We've got to be adding value and just be more responsive.
I agree with that.
And not be perfect, because that's the issue, isn't it? Is that we, you know, when we get ourselves in this kind of long-term view of having all our FAQs written and it's all perfect, we almost can't come back from that. You know, we then we're like, no, we're sticking with this.
Exactly. It's like we become more interested in almost defending why it's going to work.
Exactly.
Because we've spent so long on it. And I think, you know, your point about being more responsive, I think it's, for me, agile is more than just deploying a whole range of agile tools and techniques. You know, we've kind of think, oh, agile, it's all about sprints and scrums and all of these kind of techie project terms. But actually, I think agile is kind of first and foremost a kind of change of mindset. You know, it's about focusing on the end customer, the human challenge. You know, it's not about what our new process should be. It's about how do we sort this problem for our people, or how do we get them to feel more energized, or how do we get them to feel more productive, or how do we get them to feel more included? So it's more of a kind of human challenge. And I think that's where the value added comes from, because we're focusing on human beings' real needs.
I love that. So what would a good example of that be? You know, what have you noticed?
So I think, for example, right, so when we innovate, we often set our goal as being the reform of an existing process. And unfortunately, this kind of restricts immediately our creativity and results in kind of small incremental changes, you know, tinkering at the margin, rather than the fundamental change we need. So we often get asked by clients to help them change their approach to performance management, or help us change our performance management system, actually, is probably a better example. And unfortunately, there's kind of two key assumptions behind this. Is that performance can be managed. So it's a performance management system. And secondly, it's a system and they need a system to do it. So immediately they're coming at it from, we need to manage performance and we need a system to do it. And therefore, you're not going to get much creativity. You're not going to get much innovation as a result. But if you broaden the challenge that you're undertaking and focus on the human, not the process problem that you want to solve. So instead of changing the performance management system, you ask yourselves, how can we enable people to improve their performance? Or how can we enable people to be even better at their jobs? So you're coming at it from a kind of value added rather than just tinkering with the system. And I think for me, that is a more agile approach.
And more human.
Yeah.
So what about, I mean, I think, again, when we think about agile, we need to remember good sort of data, don't we? So, and I think, again, you know, we can be a bit weak when it comes to data. So we, if you think of, when I think about meetings I'd attend with kind of senior leaders, it would all be on things like, I don't know, who's absent or who's on maternity leave, or how many, you know, what's our churn data, or even worse, that sort of ratings data, so bad data. And I think when we see outside, the HR teams that are doing well are really hot on being led by data, and not necessarily having to have beautiful HR systems, because we know that that's really tricky. But even sort of, I don't know, just more interesting data. So it could be, you know, companies that do pulse surveys for people in their first 3 months of work. You know, what's that kind of telling you about your onboarding experience? Or even just going for something like, you know, the net promoter score, you know, how many people would recommend your place to their friends and family as, or colleagues, as somewhere great to work, is that's good data that starts a good conversation, if you like.
And I think it's about this kind of blend of data, because we deal with human being, getting absolutely valid data on human beings is really, really tough. And we've tried to create it, haven't we, by the things that we can count. So how many days people have taken off being sick. So as you write, you know, the absenteeism, or how many people have left us. We can count that and we can say for certainty that that's good data. It's valid data. But what's it actually telling us? You know, it tends to be kind of aggregated at too high a level, or it lacks context. And I think that what we see, don't we, with HR teams who are really much more agile, is they are using a blend of insight. So as you pointed out, pulse surveys rather than the big annual engagement survey, but also things like focus groups or observation techniques. I remember Virgin Trains did this, didn't they? You know, they observed people at work, in their doing their job. So they observed a chef on a train, or a train driver, or a customer service assistant. And what they wanted to understand were, you know, when do they see a boss? When do they feel particularly stressed? When do they have some downtime? So they were really kind of designing around the needs of the human beings that actually worked for them, rather than when it suited the big central to HR team. So I think it's about, you know, if we're going to be agile, then we have to have great data. We know that that's hard, but I think it's about saying we can use a blend of data to at least tell the story that means that we're driven by data and insights, rather than we need to change the performance management system.
I love that. So if we think about our listeners out there, the HR people that say, yep, we want to, as a team, become more agile. What do you think, Lucy, in terms of what's a good place to start?
I think in addition to what are the data and insights that you've got, all right? So I think, you know, we should make sure that they are being quite critical of the data and insights that are driving what it is that they want to do. But I think a key thing for being agile is to start to frame how we think about what we do in HR as being about product design rather than service delivery.
Why does that matter?
Well, I think for me, it's not just language, right? Because you might think, well, you know, just call it HR products then rather than HR service. It's not just about language. It's a mindset change. If we start to think about what we do, so back up a little bit. If we think about service delivery, it's about consistent processes applied universally. It's about efficiency. It's about reaction rather than proactivity often. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we think about HR products, and a product could be anything from an email to a policy to a process to a campaign to an initiative, when we think about what we do as an HR product, then we start with the end user. What are their needs, wants, pain points? What's the experience we want to create for them? And more than that, if our product isn't being used, if managers and employees are resistant to using our process or our product, then we change the product. You know, it makes me laugh. If you think about if we produced widgets and no one was buying our widgets, we wouldn't put them on a mandatory training program to make them understand how to use our widgets or ensure compliance with using the widgets. You would just change the widget, wouldn't you? Change the product. And then I think
your point as well, that with that, is that sometimes I think that we tend to design products around what's useful to us as HR, you know, rather than thinking about that end user. So I think that reference is really helpful. Sort of, you know, why are we doing this?
Yeah, exactly. And if our product isn't being used, then perhaps we need to change it.
Yeah.
And then I think in answer to your question about kind of where would I start, I think rather than thinking we have to do a kind of rollout across the whole organization, look for early adopters. You know, we've all got one or two managers who are a bit more open, a bit more curious, and be prepared to work with us on something.
Yeah.
Or use your own HR team. I mean, Sky do this, don't they? They, you know, will always kind of test it out with HR as the early adopters, which again gives them a bit more credibility when they're then going out and trying to sell it to and market it to other parts of the organization, because they've tried it out and they've used it. So I think, you know, increasingly we're seeing this kind of early adopters.
So again, I mean, perhaps another way that we can be more agile is if we stop thinking so long term. And I know it, again, comes from a good place. We get really excited about what we want to deliver, and we probably just go a bit too over the top. And if you think about, if you're in a center of expertise, for example, and then you've got sort of colleagues in other centers of expertise, and they're all coming up with their plans, and then the business partners are just sort of overwhelmed with all of this stuff that's coming from them. And, you know, so I think if we can, I like this, I'll give Shop Direct as a great example.
Oh, yeah.
So they had this sort of longer term direction. They knew the experience they wanted to create for their people. They knew what the projects that they wanted to do. So whether it's onboarding or performance management or whatever, but they actually only took a couple of things and then they worked on these kind of 12-week sprints.
Yeah.
So much more manageable. You know, it's little often kind of in the moment, 12 weeks. And the good thing about doing that as well is that you can actually involve more people in the HR team. So you can get everybody on board if there's only one or two things going on at once.
Yeah, because we used to always, when we worked together in HR, we would have a list of projects as long as your arm, wouldn't you? You know, you'd be having to move forward on every single front. And as you say, it's resource intensive. But because you can't then review it quickly enough, amend it quickly enough, because you've got so many projects, everything takes longer. Whereas actually the Shop Direct example is you have two or three projects on the go and you get them done and then you move and say, right, what's the next thing? And is it what the business wants right now?
Yeah. And I think just trying to not stop thinking about annual processes. You know, we know annual processes don't work for human beings. They certainly don't work with the pace of business today. Also, let's think, for example, the dreaded 9-box grid. And you, if you listen to Lucy and I, you know, we hate the 9-box grid. But we've done them, used them. And if you think about that annual talent review using the 9-box grid, where it would take us kind of 6 months to get it agreed, you know, before we could even share it with anyone. So if you're thinking about hiring managers coming to us and saying, I've got a vacancy, show me the talent. And we're like, well, I'm sorry, you'll have to come back in 3 months' time. So, you know, they want to know now. So I think we've just got to go, we've got to be ready for that. And it doesn't need to be perfect, but little and often.
And then I think I'd probably finally maybe sort of drop this need for perfection and go for test and learn. And you, I think you've kind of got examples of that, haven't you, that you've come across?
Yeah, we've got several examples, but I think about Netflix, and you can imagine that they would do this well. So they went for this approach called minimal viable product for their leadership development. So what they did was they knew they wanted to kind of develop the next generation of leaders. So they came up with this online platform. It had kind of leadership modules on it, and employees could kind of work on it on their own pace, but they just went for a small selection of resources. And then the idea being that the early adopters were giving feedback and saying, no, don't like that, love this, more of this, this is missing. So they were able to use that feedback rather than us again thinking that we need to be perfect and have it all ready for them, but actually just sort of testing it out with them and then adding in what they're telling you they're missing.
And sometimes I think, you know, again, this kind of minimum viable product, it sounds very technical and difficult. Yeah. Whereas actually it's about what's the kind of minimal I can get away with, get some feedback and iterate.
Yes.
That kind of test and learn concept that's probably sort of more human language.
Yeah.
We've got our jargon, haven't we? So I think probably it might be an idea just to kind of summarize what we've talked about here. You know, I think it's this need to speed up, recognizing that we need to be more responsive. We can't possibly do things in the way that we've always done it. And agile as an approach could really work for us. So thinking about the sprint planning, thinking about early adopters, thinking about this product mindset, thinking about the blend of data and insights that we've got to make sure that we're truly data-driven and insight-driven. And then finally, as we've just discussed, you know, experiment, pilot, test and learn.
Yeah.
Try something out. You don't have to roll it out across the whole organization. It just gives you the insights then about what's working, what isn't, and enabling you to tweak it before you've sat on a 9-month pay and grading project, like I described at the beginning. Okay, so probably running out of time, so need to wrap up. If you're interested in finding out more about Agile HR, but also how to do those outdated people practices in different, fresh, and relevant ways, then do visit us at disruptivehr.com, or even join our club, which is a global community for people who are wanting to make changes to HR. Lovely being with you. Good to see you, Karen. See you next time.
Good to see you. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Disruptive HR. If you want to find out how you can disrupt HR, then visit us at disruptivehr.com.